My father was a farmer. They married into a fisherman's family, like Peter. And at that particular time, there was very few. There were the only fishermen in Killybegs, except for a few in, like, small boats, punts and yawls. And, well, I was 19 when I got married, and that's 37 years ago. Well, you were just called a fishwife. You know what was...
You had no status, really.
Not really. Yeah. Not at that particular time, no.
Yes.
I mean, there was really... They didn't want to associate much with them because they were classed as very poor.
Things have changed a lot since then.
Things have changed a lot since then. Anybody's money that time was better than a fisherman's money. It would really... Well, it's hard to explain it because nowadays it wouldn't be credited that it was like that in those times. But it was.
Well, in days gone by, there was nothing only the hook and line. And it was laborious work. Mussels had to be all opened out of the shell. Yeah, nothing. There was no. When I was young, there was no motor. All sail and oar. That's around this part of the coast, you know. Because we were reared there, we couldn't keep a big boat. You had to pull the boat up on the beach every time you went out, or every time you came in, rather. No place to tire. It was a day and night work. Markets were bad. Real bad. There was practically no money for us. The method of distribution was bad. In those days, there was no ice, you know. None at all. Month of time was our only time we could make any money, because the fishing in the summer months was no good at all. So you had to do all rowing. In the summer season, a few months of the summer, you put that down salmon fishing. Salmon were a very bad price. Roughly around in those days, an old money, a shilling a pound. Then you'd do a spell at the lobster. Market there was very bad. I fished lobster for 5 shillings a dozen. That's hard to believe, but it's true.
The sons then came along, and of course they took up the fishing too. And on the 20th of March 1959. On a Friday night, I was waiting on them to come in from fishing, and one of my sons didn't come. He was lost at sea.
What happened? Did you ever hear?
Yeah. Just as something that couldn't be avoided, like. At that particular time, I wasn't kind of in the condition like to inquire into it. It's just a matter. Then, of course, they were looking on from the 20th of March to May, to his body was found. Of course, there were several just bits and pieces, like there was really 3 funerals, parts of it. So I didn't prevent the other 3 going fishermen either. They still kept on fishing. So it's... That's a lot better times than it was then. I mean, there was a 10, 12 pound in the week. That time was counted a good week. Whereas now it's hundreds.
Well, I think there are much better times. A long way. There's better facilities. There's a better way of living aboard a boat, you know. Good accommodation. The fishermen themselves are really better equipped, you know. In those days, on the open boat, you know, we had no way of cooking anything. Nothing at all. It could be anything up to 12 hours, maybe longer, between meals.
Was the cold a big factor with you?
It was. When you were young, you know, as we say, the greenhorn starting off, it was cold. Very cold. You got accustomed to it.
But in severe cold, people lose the use of their hands, for example.
Oh, yes. Lucky if that's all you lost. The hands used to really get cold, you know. All the time. Slapping. But when you got started working, you know, and kept the body movement, you know, and your arms, the blood and circulation, that wasn't too bad. It's only when you were sitting idle that the cold really took effect. But the night work was the worst in a small boat, you know. Out at night. Exposed to all the elements. Hailstones, snow, frost, everything you could mention. Well, if it was reasonable at all, you had to be at sea. Even the boats were small. And the old men, you know, they were a tough breed. The old fishermen. Real tough. They were a hardy race.
Peter McCalliog talking to me on the family trawler, the Nordkapp. I met his wife in their comfortable house on the hill. The Nordkapp is skippered by their son, Francis.
What you have here, first-term in fishing grounds, Donegal Bay, which I suppose one of the best bays in the British Isles, if you look, are like, stood up to Fleetwood trawlers first, and now ourselves, our own fleet.
What do you fish for there?
Whitings, haddock, cod, nearly all species, whitefish, herrings, mackerel, sprat. And then you have our next grounds then, closer to us are Stags of Broadhavens, about 40-50 miles, about 4.5-5 hours steaming from Killybegs. After that, after Stags, you have the continental shelf. So we haven't any boats here that's really able for that, about over the 200 fathoms mark. And there's a few of the newer boats here that you have, a few of those 86 footers might be, but for the smaller type boats, there's no.
How do you decide which ground to go to, Donegal Bay or the Stags, for example, when you set sail out of the harbour here?
Well, you've the number of boats and you're in radio contact with them. Most of the time you hear them. And you hear what the fishing's like. And you can decide then what's the best place to go for, like, you know. This is a very bad coast here. It can change here very, very quick. When you get a blow up here, you get a sea to contend with. It's different to the Irish Sea now, or the North Sea even. It's worse here because the sea you get here is mountainous even. And you can have that up even for 3-4 days after the wind drops, like, you know.
You were talking about Donegal Bay and all the type of fish that you can take there.
Mm-hmm.
But as I understand it, a boat is equipped with a certain set of nets to take a certain type of fish.
Yeah. Well, if you're fishing for whitefish, you'll be using a net very hard on the bottom, like, you know, tight on the bottom, as tight as possible. And if you're fishing for herring, well, you're using the net light or mackerel, because those fish tend to swim high. And different type of nets altogether.
But you carry them all?
You carry them all, you have to.
And how long does it take to change your set of nets to decide what you're going to do?
A few minutes, just. You're rigged just to, all the boats are rigged just to change as quickly as possible. Lots of time, save as much time as possible.
What are the dangers of losing nets?
That's very easy done. So it is. Bad ground, if your warps or the bridles or combination bridles you use to the net are bad or anything. And then if you're trying to tow in heavy weather or something like that, it's very severe in gear as well.
Do you snag them off the bottom?
You can snag them off the bottom. You can burst them in heavy seas. You can blow them with fish, but that doesn't happen so much nowadays. It used to be years ago, but not anymore.
What about fish prices now, from the time you started fishing?
Well, it's better now, because even with rising costs and all, like, prices are more stable now, like, you know. I mean, years ago, you might get one day, if you got easterly one or something like that, well, that meant the boats on the east coast weren't out, and you were sure of getting a good price, like, you know, this kind of thing. I suppose they were thinking the same thing, wishing for a westerly one. But now it's more stable, like, you know, we've got most of our sales are done here locally, which just helps a lot. Before this, it was sent all to Dublin. And there, the last freight there, I think, in Dublin, is someone working over £2 a box. So at the end of a week's fishing, let's say you had a couple of hundred bucks or something, and up. That meant a hell of a lot, like, you know. plus commission and everything else.
Well, what happens now? They're auctioned on the quay?
Most the stuff are like small parts into Dublin, that's all, but wouldn't be saleable here.
Are you all members of the co-op here, no?
We are, yeah, the majority of us. There might be one or two boats that are not, but majority, say 99% of the boats are.
And do you feel that auction is the fairest way of selling fish? Is it not possible that prices can be fixed against you?
Not really. I think the auction's about the fairest system you'll get out. So it is, yeah. Definitely.
Skittling, about £4 on the right, £4, £4 down at four, going at four, for ten, 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 20, £4.20, but £4.20 on the right, £4.20, £4.20, £30, £4, on the right, £4.40, £4.40, £4.40, £50, £4.50, £60, £60, going number £60, £4.60, £70, £4.70, £4.70, £80, £80, £80, £90, £90, £90, £90 on the left, £90, going for £95, £5 on the five, ten, by ten, £10.20, £20, going by £20, £30. £30 on the left by £30, selling by £34, by £40, by £40, £50, by £50, selling by £50 on the left by £50, £60, going by £60, by £60 on the right by £60, for the last time at £560, name it take.
The All Garry is a fine modern trawler skippered by Noel McGing. We went aboard her at 4:45 in the morning, and at 5 o'clock we moved gently out of harbour. But it didn't stay gentle for long. There was a 4-6 wind, and the waters of Donegal Bay seemed to move in all directions at once. Before succumbing to severe seasickness, I spoke to Noel. Noel, it takes you about an hour to steam out to the fishing grounds.
Yeah, it was an hour today anyway.
So we must be nearly there.
Yeah, we're ready to shoot now.
And these buzzers you were pressing just now, that was for what? To wake the crew?
Just to get the crew ready to shoot.
And the crew sleep aboard all the time, do they? The
crew sleep aboard from Sunday evening up Sunday. We go to fish on Sunday after Mass. Generally after Mass, we're at it then for Friday night. And, they must be aboard to fish like...
Well now, when you shoot your nets, you'll tow them how far?
We tow them 14, 16 miles.
And depending then on what you come up with, you'll either stay there or move on, wouldn't
that's
it?
Right. We have a good indication after that length of time whether it's worth our while staying in that place or moving to another area.
And how many times in one day will you shoot your nets?
4 or 5 times, depending on how far we have to go to the fishing ground, depending on if we tear our gear or bust up or something happens to us.
And each tow takes how long?
About 4 hours.
And how do you know what kind of fish you're going to get?
We have certain nets for certain types of fish. For white fish or for herring. Or for fish meal, we have different types of nets for the different types of fish. And I would say local knowledge gives us an indication as to what kind of fish we're going to catch in a certain place.
And what about all this elaborate instrumentation in front of you? It's like the flight deck of a Boeing or something.
Nothing above the average. It's used for catching fish. Throughout the day, you'll see it all being used. It all has to work every day. And without it, we're very little use in going to fish. It's very essential to the operation to have it all working.
But really, it's a mixture of local knowledge and your scientific instruments here.
I would say yes, it's a combination of both.
What kind of money would you have to clear to pay the running expenses of a boat like this?
For the running expenses, £1,400-1,500 a week.
Would that include repayments on the boat?
No, it would not. the repayments about 2,400 a week.
So you're talking a big business, really?
It's a big business. It's a lot of money.
And 2,400 before the crew gets a share?
That's right.
Or you, for that matter.
For me, either.
That day on the Allgarry, we fished for 16 hours. In the late evening, as we headed back towards Killybegs, I checked on how the day had gone. You only had a fair day, I'd say, Noel. What did you do? Three tows?
We had three tows for 60 boxes, approximately.
And how many miles to a tow?
12 miles to the tow. Roughly, then, 12 miles.
Now, 60 boxes, would that see you out on the day?
Just about. Just about now, depending a lot on the price now. If the price is middling, it would just about clear the day.
You got mostly what?
Oh, mostly white, some 20 box of mixed fish.
What's the best fish to go after, from your point of view?
The best fish to go after is herring. There's no doubt about that. Herring is the main fish for us. But
what would be a good day on herring? How many boxes?
Oh, 100 boxes of herring. It's a good day.
What's the best you've ever taken on this one?
500 boxes for one pull. For one tow, like.
For one tow?
For one tow.
And you were able to get it inboard, were you?
No, there's no problem. Like, the boat is equipped for that, like. Not so hard. That's the easiest part.
First catch up.
Yeah, today is a much harder day when there's not much fish.
We had nearly arrived back in port when we heard dramatic news.
Ian O'Hanlon here with the news at 6:30. First, here's Michael Murphy to read the main bulletin.
The Minister for Foreign Affairs said in Luxembourg today the government might be prepared to waive the ban on big trawlers due to come into operation on Sunday. This would apply to vessels from EEC countries ready to restrict catches in our waters. Dr. Fitzgerald and the Minister for Fisheries are in Luxembourg for an EEC minister's meeting on fisheries. This evening, the Irish Fishermen's Organization said it was baffled by Dr. Fitzgerald's position on the issue and had called for his resignation. A bomb has destroyed a wholesale warehouse in Belfast.
Well, Noel, what do you think of that?
The staff got clear before the explosion, which started a fire.
Not very much. Like, there's not much future in it for us if he... They're supposed to be giving us something in one hand and they're taking it away directly in the other. It's not much.
Do you think the 50-mile limit could have been made to work in any way, though?
Oh, it can be made to work. They have the boats. All they want is the will, but they don't have the will.
But surely we don't have enough boats. We've only three or four fishery protection boats, and they can't cover the whole coast.
They have, but I would think is you have nurseries where fish breed. And if they were protected, and surely six corvettes are fit to protect stretches of water around our coast to that extent, I would believe.
Well, you feel let down by this, what sounds like a retraction of what was decided last week?
Well, it is a retraction, like, there's no doubt about it. Like, if you give a 50-mile, if you talk about a 50-mile limit and then and the next breath, let in the big trawlers, the whole object of the thing is defeated. You're trying to get out the big trawlers. They're the ones that's doing the big damage.
Someone said to me they do not so much a trawling job as a vacuum cleaning job. Is this right?
That's true. It's systematic. Vacuum cleaned. They just wipe every place clean. They have the facilities to do it. They have the research boats to back them up. They just go from one area to the other and just clean the whole coast along with it.
Someone said you can judge by nationalities, that certain nationalities are worse than others, that some of them scoop up everything they can and nothing ever goes back.
Nothing ever goes back. I would agree with that. Different nationalities follow different species of fish. The Dutch, they follow the heron. The French, they follow the whitefish. And they can sell any kind of whitefish in France, anything with an eye in it, they can sell it. And they have been brought to the courts here and fined and been shown to use small mesh. And it has been all swept under the carpet. They haven't been fined for the job at all. The Dutch, they have the finest heron fleet in the European waters. And they just make their home off Donegal Coast for 3 months of the year, 4 months of the year.
Fishing limits and their enforcement, quotas, conservation, these are the subjects that override every other consideration in the minds of the trawler men nowadays. Everyone has an opinion, but there is consensus as to the need for action. Tony Lennon, a crew member of an Arran trawler.
We do need a 50-mile limit. I don't agree with the quota system at all. I think we need a 50-mile limit or nothing, and no quotas.
Francis McCalliog, the skipper of the Nordkap.
They're taking everything. I mean, they don't throw anything back. So they don't. The French, they do a lot of harm. Because they use a very small mesh net, below regulations altogether. And everything they take with them, because they'll eat anything in France as long as it's named fish. So they will.
Who else? What about the Russians?
I don't know so much about the Russians, but about 3 years ago, I remember the Russian fleet, there was about 14 or 50 of them working off the stags of the mothership. And those boats were continuous. They were continually fishing. And loading the mothership all the time. So, I mean, when you take the like of that, about two or three of those boats would have the catching power of the whole Irish fleet combined, for the size of boats you have.
Peter McCalliog.
I have been a fisherman all my life. And there's a poet, there's an old saying, a poacher thinks more than when he gets illegal and a ten he'll get legal. But I think Ireland's entitled to a better deal. See, after all, there's a lot of money invested in local boats. You can see it here. They're all modern boats now, only they're not all on today. They're good for them gone out. So after all, if you invest 300 or 500 or you sign for that amount, you'd like to get a fair deal, you know.
James MacLeod, formerly a fisherman, now director of a local factory.
The real problem that faces everybody in the fishing industry is the conservation of stocks. There has been such a build-up in fishing fleets everywhere that the demand on stocks is, as we see it, excessive. And there should be good future for the fishing. There's a big fleet built up now of fine modern boats and tending to extend their activities all the time, to increase in size, extend their activities. And provided stocks can be properly handled, proper conservation, there should be a good and continuing future in fishing. But we've always felt that fishing to date has been very much akin to hunting, in that everybody just went out for what was there to catch as much as they could, and that a different thinking has to be introduced where it becomes more, in some degree, akin to farming, agriculture, where you study your stocks and how you utilise them.
Do you see conservation tied up with this 50-mile limit?
Oh, I would think so, very much so. Because if you don't have control, if you cannot control the fishing operation, then you are always going to have somebody who is going to disregard the rules.
Peter Wynne, a member of the crew of a local trawler.
The limits, I would like to see them enforced, even if I did have to come to a similar situation as the Cod War, but I don't think it's quite possible in this country, because we have relied in the last few years and will continue to rely too much on EEC policies and their grants and everything else. And as the Dutch pointed out the other night in the evening paper, Ireland is quite happy to take the EEC grants but not prepared to give the fish. So I can't see how Paddy Donegan has any choice but to back down if it came to the grunge, which is unfortunate, but I can't see any other way out of it. I'd like to think that we would have our own 50-mile limit, but I'm afraid it's wishful thinking a lot.
At the moment, are there many foreigners fishing close in?
You get them all right. I mean, the thing is, the naval service, no matter what limit you have, is just far too small to contend with any of these people. And it's the old story. I mean, there was one there last week, with a French boat arrested in Galway. And to my mind, it's a case of the fleet of them being in, send one man inside, he has to be arrested. And well, he's been taken in, the rest of them are in fishing. I mean, there's no way, unless you have a fairly good cover operation by the naval service in conjunction maybe with the Air Corps. If you had that going, you could do something about it, but the way things are at the moment, any man can come in there and fish, no one say about him.
Well, at the moment, do you come across many foreign boats when you're out?
You do. You can come across them fairly regularly. I suppose the bigger the boats are, as Francis probably told you, they just steam right through you, and they couldn't care less. I mean, they'll come in anyway. I mean, we might as well just be peasants on the water. Get out of the way quick. You're going to go through you. But there is a large amount of them. They work in fleets, you see. They very, very seldom get the odd boat on his own. And it's the story of a coaster going along with them, or a mothership, whatever they like to call it. They just fill up, fill up, fill up, and that's it. So that isn't too pleasing to watch.
Peter Pringle, a crew member of the Sheehan.
The territorial limits as we have them are worked on a contour base, right? And so fish don't recognise these limits either. And we work, in fact, most of the time outside of the existing limits. That's where the ground is. And so any limit has got to be in relationship to the actual fishing ground that's there. Now, there are arguments, you know, about the capital investment that's been put into the fleet and the return that's been given. But in areas like Donegal, this whole coast along here lives on fishing. If there's no fishing in this pier, there's no money in this town. That's the pure and simple fact of the matter. The existing factories on the shore, all the ancillary support industries, even it's the service industries, wouldn't function, because there are like 1,200 people here now, approximately, and it would be, I'd say, lose by a third of that sort of population in this town if there was no fishing. The whole town depends on it. If there's a period for 5 or 6 weeks when there's no fishing here, you can see the money is not circulating, you see. So we need the 50-mile limit is essential. It's essential that what grounds are there are protected. At the present moment and for some years past, one of the principal parts of the industry for us is the herring. We fish the herring through the winter period from late August through till maybe March, possibly April, depending on the season. Now, in the summertime, we take a limited amount of herring out from the stag grounds. This is on bottom trawling. The size of our fleet hasn't, in the past, made any great difference. You know, hasn't destroyed or hampered the development of herring in the area. But in the last 4 or 5 years, particularly with the large Russian fleets, Dutch fleets that are out there, and they're working like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with factory ships backing them up, with their own oil tankers even. The Russians have their own oil tankers out there, fishing solidly in large vessels that are catching in one lift probably more than we would kill in a day's fishing. But what happens there is they're depleting the stocks, and consequently, during the period when the herring is spawning and they come into the shore, the volume of fish is just not there anymore. And for the past 2 years, the only effective way to kill herring during the winter here has been to fish up to the shore, because the volume of fish just hasn't been there. If that continues, there will be no herring here.
So do you think that given Corvette, say, based in Killybegs, that you could hold off these Dutch and Russian fleets?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Definitely. If the corvette did its job. If it did its... You essentially need an all-weather vessel. But at least you need a vessel that can go to sea in the weather that this type of Varden boat is capable of fishing in. If the weather's so bad that they're not capable of fishing, well, then there's no problem. Last weekend, I wasn't here myself, but I believe last weekend there was a large fleet of Danish boats in here. On any period during extremely bad weather, you could get anything up to 8, 10. I've seen 14 Dutchmen anchored out there in the harbour. I mean, these boats would normally be fishing out on the grounds off the coast. And that's an accepted fact. We here, the general attitude amongst fishermen in relationship to this is that we listen to what's going on within the government. We hear them declaring 50-mile limit and then backing down on the thing and then declaring it again and probably going to back down on it again and even allowing themselves the escape clause of saying, well, you know, if provided the EEC countries will give us a guarantee that what fish they will catch will conserve stocks, well, then we will concede to that. Well, we know, and everybody else knows in the industry, that the foreign vessel is not going to adhere to that. It hasn't worked in the Irish Sea. It isn't working anywhere, the quota system. And so therefore there's only one thing to do, and that's push out the limits and maintain what's there. And in getting that, then, the problem for the Irish fleet then is the practice proper conservation methods and proper fishing methods then to ensure that the stocks come back, because the stocks are not there.
Sean McGuinness, a director of a local fish meal factory, a man who has gone to Brussels to push the fishermen's cause.
Even with what boats we have at the moment, we can make a good enough fist of it if they disperse them properly around the coast and if they had any backup from air service at all. But the chief element is having caught poachers, that you want to have a realistic fine. I mean, taking in a trawler which may be 150 foot long and fining him 50 or 100 pound is absolutely ridiculous. They want to have a realistic minimum scale of fine starting at least 25,000 pound.
But don't they do that? Don't they confiscate the gear?
That's a separate penalty. But they want to have minimum fines as well as confiscating the gear and catch. And indeed, for the factory trawlers, they would want to take the processing equipment that they have aboard into account as well, because some of them have the same processing equipment that we have in our own factory here, plus the addition of fishmeal plants.
Albert Swan, whose company in Killybegs makes nets.
You will always get people that will break the law anyway. But if there's a law there, then any person that does break it and is caught and he pays the penalty, he hasn't any real crib. But it's the greatest problem is if you haven't got a law, you can't even take the man in there. If you could, if you're in the position to take him in, you still haven't got the law to take him in. So I think that the 50-mile limit, whilst you may think that it's impossible to patrol, it is impossible to patrol every square mile of that at all times. But there's a lot of the foreigners, they're not at all the lawbreakers that they all the time. If there's a law there, then it is possible to enforce it. But if there's no law there, then it's just free for all.
Joe Burke, another local businessman who has an interest in fishing.
Yeah, well, if we're going to get a 50-mile limit or anything approaching it, I believe that it will be a problem to police it. A problem from the financial point of view. I don't believe that the government here could possibly afford the number of ships that might be needed to patrol the area effectively. But they should consider buying very good second-hand, probably stern trawlers now, and be fishing out in that area and make them pay for themselves in that way, and have a man on board or two men on board capable of making the arrest.
Give some crew member police powers, in effect.
Yes, or even have a departmental man on or a member from the Department of Defence on. I mean, you'd be working like the old Q-ships in the case of the World War One, something like that, you know.
But the great difference, the Q-ships were secretly armed. Would you arm your stern trawlers?
Well, that would be a matter for the external affairs to make up their mind about. But if they will have to do something like this. I mean, you must be in a position to indicate to the poacher that you're being business.
Exactly. You're not going to be able to enforce it without being armed.
Well, you can have a gun. I don't think the intention is to sink any ship, but you can warn them. And most of them toe the line once you fire at them.
A drastic remedy for what is seen as a drastic problem. Proposals like this arise from the doubt and uncertainty that everyone feels.
The people in the industry are very confused at this point in time, because we have tried to make it abundantly clear over this last number of weeks, and indeed the IFO over this last 12 months, that what we need at the moment is a fairly stringent conservation measure, because our stocks are very badly depleted. Landings of herring in particular, which the West Coast processing plants depend on for most of their supplies, are only about 50% of what they were in the 73 season, and the prospects seem to be even worse for the coming season.
The reasons for conservation are pressing.
Another point that we're very conscious of here, of course, on the West Coast, is that take the fishing industry, boat building, net making, and all the other engineering and ancillary bits and pieces out of Killybegs, that there's very little employment left, and the same holds true of Bortonport, Greencastle, Ross of Eel, Dingle, Castletown Bear, and the other major landing centres around the coast.
With depleted stocks and fears for the future, it's surprising that the fishing industry doesn't seek new types of fish. The Danes steam for 5 days to catch blue whiting off our west coast, where they're in abundance. Not a single Irish boat goes after this fish. I remarked on this to the skipper of a Danish trawler, an Icelander called Arni Gislason.
I don't understand the Irish people in this case, because they are having the country almost at the banks. In the beginning, it's about 50 to 100 miles off the west coast of Ireland, and then it comes nearer, and there may be some 180 to 250 miles in May. So you are having the fish at your door.
These are worrying times for the fishing industry, and new initiatives are badly needed. Noel McGing of the Allgarry sees the future in terms of black and white.
The overall picture since we got the boat seems to indicate that we can make our pay if we get reasonable chance and reasonable protection within the limits. You know, if we get some kind of limits to give us some kind of protection against these big factory ships, if we get some kind of protection against them, we stand a good chance of paying off. And the people to come after us, our own children, they have a chance to come after us. Possibly, if we don't get the limits, we'll succeed ourselves to get out of... We'll break even in the fishing, but there'll be no livelihood for anyone to come after us.